God, teach us how to be peacemakers in a hostile world. O God, teach us how to be peacemakers in a hostile world. O God, teach us how to be peacemakers in a hostile world. This was our mantra. This was our mantra at our action in northeastern Colorado. And before I begin, I'd just like to extend not only my gratitude, but the gratitude of Carol and Ardith as well for all of the thousands of letters that we received, many of them from you here in the room this afternoon. And also for the thousands, or almost 1,000 letters that have gone to the judge on our behalf prior to sentencing. These are the two stacks sent by the prosecutor's office last week. These are letters of support, as opposed to one letter of unsupport. So as I say, thank you, thank you, thank you. Most of you know me from the Ground Zero Connection. I've been involved with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action for the last 10 years. And also I see folks here from the Abe Keller Peace Foundation at this table here. It's just so wonderful to see folks. Ground Zero has been involved since 1977, educating in nonviolence, educating on the issue of the Trident submarine and the Trident missile system, the monster of the sea, as it were, each one with 192 individually targeted nuclear warheads. One submarine could eliminate life on this planet as we know it, and yet we have 18. The concession is that we eventually will get down to 14. We're supposed to be happy? I don't think so. My real peace actions and activities began back in Michigan. After a career of teaching for 25 years, I was a band director and taught piano and vocal music. I left teaching and became full-time peace and justice worker. And this took on many forms. I was involved first with the civil rights movement and then the farm worker movement. And Helen Caldicott, a pediatrician who was working at the Children's Hospital in Boston, came to our college in Grand Rapids, Michigan, to speak on the nuclear issue. How many of you are familiar with Dr. Helen Caldicott? Yes. How many of you have been intimately affected in your whole peace activities after hearing her speak? I don't think I've ever heard as dynamic of a woman speak on the nuclear issue than Dr. Helen Caldicott. I went home that night thinking if there was any one issue that I would become involved in, it would be the nuclear issue. Up to that point, I'd been involved in Central American issues through the National Assembly of Religious Women. The farm worker issue was a big issue with them, and always tried to be multi-issued, because they are all related. Every issue is intimately connected. And just before I began, in walked a woman that I admire and respect so deeply, and she's sitting here in the room with you today, Kathy Kelly. And again, a dynamo speaker and a dynamo in working on the issue of Iraq. Kathy has spent years traveling and living in Iraq, was there during the bombing, and has been with the group and formed the group Voices in the Wilderness. And how many of you are familiar with Voices in the Wilderness? Great. That is wonderful. So we welcome Kathy. It's just wonderful to see you, Kathy. Why don't you stand? Yeah. Another mentor of mine was Sister Marjorie Tuitt. Now, some of the sisters in the room might remember Marge. Marge was a person who was just, again, a very dynamic Dominican sister engaged in the Central American issue and injustice issues for wherever, whatever. And she had a saying, we must deal with the burden of knowledge. The burden of knowledge. And that, along with these other folks and influences that I've mentioned, is why I am where I am today. Because that burden of knowledge wore heavily on me. In Michigan, we worked with the Michigan Faith and Resistance, and we did nonviolent direct actions at Air Force bases where B-52s were armed with nuclear bombs. We also did issues and actions at Walled Lake, the Williams International Corporation, the manufacturers of the engines for cruise missiles. And cruise missiles seem to be the weapon of choice today. So we did our major actions at those two weapons sites. And then in 1991, Michigan became nuclear weapons free. All of the B-52s were transferred, sadly, instead of being decommissioned, to other Air Force bases. And it was at that time that Carol and Ardith went east, and I came west with Sue. Most of you know Sue Ablau. Sue has been my partner and wonderful life companion at this point, and is my support person during my imprisonment. So if anyone needs any updates or whatever, I would urge you to get in contact with Sue or get on Sue's email list. And that is S. Ablau, A-B-L-A-O, the number one, at yahoo.com. My GZ, Jackie at GZ Center email has just gone kaput. I can't go out with it or in with it. So those that have that email, I will be getting a new email address, or basically I think it would be best to use Sue's because she will be the one that will be doing the updating and the responding. So we're talking about citizenship today. And when we look back to World War II, we say, where were the good Germans? Why did the Holocaust take place? Were there not any folk ready and willing to put their life on the line to stop the trains? And we know now there were. There were many people who spoke out, who did action, who hid the Germans who were being persecuted and targeted. The many thousands, millions that were destined for the gas chambers. But that was in the past. We are now in 2003, and we ask, where are the good Americans? We heard the Raging Granny's songs. We all are aware of what the situation is and what is happening to our country today. So we say again, where are the good Americans today? Well, I feel we're right here in this room. Right here in this room. We have an educated group right here who know the issues, and many of you have risked your lives for these issues. But what about the folks who are not educated to the issues? What about the folks who have the 30-second sound bites that give them all of their information? Well, the University of Maryland did a recent study, a national poll, and they came up with 41% still believed or were unsure whether we found nuclear weapons in Iraq. And 31% either didn't know or were sure that Iraq used weapons of mass destruction against us. Now, this is the information that people have. And where are they getting it? From our national media. From our regular national media. When they were polling the jurors for our trial, one of the questions the judge asked was, what television station do you listen to? CNN, Fox. Those were the major two stations that were listened to. The one man who listened to NPR radio was thrown off by the prosecution. So, it's the information is available, though. And some of you know, most of you know what those are. Maybe could you say some of the independent media that is available here in Seattle? Okay. 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 All right. So there are many, many available sources in this community, and I would ask you to make those known to your friends, to your families, in your workplace, so that we do come with a more educated citizenry that can actually exercise their American citizenship in a knowledgeable and in a productive way. There are many people unaware of the U.S. Constitution. They know it exists, but Article 6, Section 2, I don't believe that many, even of our judges, are aware of that article in our Constitution. I'd just like to read part of it because it is very apropos to what I would like to speak to today. This is a quote. This is Article 6, Section 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, legalese, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the U.S., shall be the supreme law of the land. Well, we have signed many treaties throughout the years. We have ratified them in the U.S. Senate. And they all come to a conclusion that the use or threat to use nuclear weapons would completely be illegal under crimes against humanity and crimes against peace. And yet, the federal courts in this country do not allow any mention of any international treaties or any international law that has been ratified and signed by our government. The UN Charter, which we were most instrumental in forming, that also states all members, this is Article 2, Section 4, all members shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. Are we still members of the UN? Do we acknowledge that those were mostly our words in that UN Charter? I don't think so. And not only the treaties and conventions mentioned, but the U.S. Army Field Manual, the U.S. Navy Field Manual, and I would propose the U.S. Air Force Field Manual also talks about the use of indiscriminate killing and the illegality of the use or threat to use this type of weaponry. Nuclear weapons cannot discriminate. Nuclear weapons kill combatants and non-combatants. And that's where the evil, the major evil, comes in. Not that I'm saying if it just killed enemy military, that would be good. No, because there are so many overlaying facts, environmentally as well as physical damage to the planet and to humanity. And yet, President Bush explicitly was quoted in the U.S. press as threatening to use nuclear weapons against the axis of evil nations. And specifically, he threatened to use them against Iraq. Well, knowing all of this and having this burden placed on our shoulders, a group of us started meeting. And we started back in January of 2002 in a 9-month birthing process. We sat with the scriptures, we studied the issues, and we developed a plan of action. We were all of Catholic Christian background, so we used the New Testament in great detail, and we also used Isaiah. Isaiah's quote, "They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." And taking that quote from Isaiah, which is also found in Micah, which is unusual that the same quote would be in two books of the Bible, most unusual. So this sort of an extra emphasis on this particular idea. Well, Plowshares is a movement that has been in existence for 23 years now. And what is the commonality of a plowshare action is the use of a hammer and the use of blood. So what we did, we each had gotten our hammers back, received them back from our last action, and we took these same hammers back to Colorado, to the northeastern corner, where the ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missile. There are 49 of them in the northeastern corner of Colorado. One was where we decided to go to, and we decided to go to this particular one because it was high on a hill, visible for miles on the thoroughfare between I-76 and I-25. Because plowshares don't do their actions in secrecy. They do them in public, and they remain at the site until military or whatever determinant group comes. After, again, we studied, and our government was asking people to go to Iraq and find, inspect, expose, and disarm nuclear weapons. So we thought, well, in imitation of that, we know where the U.S. nuclear weapons are. So we went to inspect, expose, and symbolically disarm one of these multi-numbered missiles. So we arrived on the anniversary of the bombing of Afghanistan. So we wanted to bring in as much symbolism as we could as to what was happening in our country and the importance of speaking. We went there to expose the criminality of the U.S. government and to expose this crime scene and to tell the U.S. Air Force personnel that would be coming about their obligation to never turn the key. And many of our military personnel are not aware that they are not allowed to obey an illegal order. And an illegal order would be the turning of this key to set off a nuclear weapon, because the weapon itself, or the threat to use it, is illegal. So we entered about 7:30 in the morning, cut one link of a chain. This picture up here will show that the lock is still intact. We clipped one link, opened the gate wide, went into the inner gate, clipped one link, left the lock, entered into the site of, it's about 1 acre square, out in the rancher's field. And when we started then our nuclear disarmament, we poured our blood that we had carried in baby bottles. And that also is a significance, because the greatest victims of war and violence are the children. So we carried our blood in baby bottles and took the top off and poured in the shape of crosses on the top of the silo lid. 110 tons of concrete. Now, and we hammered on that. Now, if you took a hammer to the sidewalk outside, do you think you're going to really damage it? No, it's symbolic. It is all symbolic. And then we went down and we poured our blood in the shape of a cross on the vertical sides of the silo site, and also on the railroad tracks. Again, the railroad tracks symbolizing to us the railroad tracks to Auschwitz and Dachau and the other gas chambers of Germany. We left our baby bottles on the site, we left our hammers, and we walked over to the fence because, hey, we found this, it's on high alert, it's ready to go off in the course of 15 minutes. The president makes a phone call, and within 15 minutes, that missile would be launched. And within 30 minutes, it would have reached its target and destroyed everything in a 50-mile radius. 20 to 25 times the power of the bomb we dropped on Hiroshima. Now, younger folks, I don't think realize that. I don't think they've seen the pictures. I don't think they've heard the story enough of what happened in Japan. And so, again, I think that's our duty and our obligation to get that message out as well. Well, we were there, and we went then to the fence, and we cut up right by the poles. There were three sections of the fence that didn't have horizontal poles. So we chose those, we cut up both sides, and we laid it down from the inside out, three of them, saying, come in, world, this is the site. Come see. Come join us in declaring this a crime scene. And then we went back on the top of the silo lid and had a liturgy that we had prepared. We prayed and we sang. We read, had readings. We prayed litanies. We were there for about 45 more minutes when we finally saw the first military vehicle coming down the highway. So we stopped in our prayer for a moment to see what and where they were going. And they ended up about a quarter or half a mile down the road, and they started shouting at us. So we raised our hands to show that we had no weapons, that we were unarmed, and that we were there in our white hazmat suits with disarmament specialist written across our chests and citizen weapons inspection team on our backs. CWIT, quit. So we thought we were very visible. After the first vehicle came, another vehicle came, and they headed out into the rancher's land, and then we saw them with their M16s leveled at us over a berm. "They're singing Christian songs," they hollered back to the other car. So it was obvious they knew that we were nonviolent and that we, who we were. But within about another half hour, two Humvees came crashing through the cattle gate, took it off its hinges. We had opened it for them, but... And then through the second gate. And the first one made it, and on the stand he testified that he was a better driver than the second one. But the second driver damaged his Humvee coming through, and then they hopped out with their M16s with grenade launchers attached. And they were all shouting at once. And all I can think of, in my little high school back in Michigan, we had a gymnasium not much bigger than this, and there was a second-story window that we watched the games out of, and it was just a din. Couldn't make out a word of what anybody was saying, but we got the message they wanted us off that site. So we were escorted off by the military at that point, handcuffed behind our backs and laid down, face down on the ground for a couple hours. Well, the bomb squad came in from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the FBI arrived, and the office of the OSI, Investigative Services of the Air Force. And we're finally taken to Greeley, to the county jail there, and held for 10 days under state charges of mischievous activity and trespass. Well, 10 days, and they dropped those charges, and the FBI picked us up and brought us to federal court in Denver. And that's where our saga with the federal government began. We were accused of depredation of government property and sent to Clear Creek County Jail, which many of you sent your letters to in Georgetown. It's a beautiful little town nestled in the mountains, 45 miles west of Denver. Beautiful sight. We got to see it after we were released. But we went in for the first court hearing, a preliminary hearing, and were told that the grand jury had met, that we were now being charged with 2155, which is sabotage, with 20 years in prison and $250,000 fine. So now the first charge was 10 years. And the judge said to us, "You better get yourselves a lawyer." So, and he suggested Walter Garrosh as an eminent Denver area lawyer who has defended other peace folk. And so we called Walter possibly, you know, within the next 2 weeks, because we were still determining what we were going to do. But we decided then, actually it was a textbook case to give to international lawyers. So we contacted, or had been in contact with Annabelle Dwyer, and who is a foremost international law authority. She spent time at The Hague. She was there at the time of the International Court of Justice decision on nuclear weaponry. And she has spent her life working on the international laws governing nuclear weapons. And we asked her to facilitate the team of lawyers. So once we gave it over to the lawyers, we sort of lost control, as it were, of our case. We were still demanding that we be consulted, and we were in constant contact with Annabelle. But we would have given up on the court system the first day we arrived for our trial, but knowing how the system works or doesn't work, the court system, not the justice system. But because we had given it over to our lawyers, we kept with them and let them do the best that they could in the course of this trial. We were denied every type of defense, even those that we didn't ask for. In a 32-page determination by the judge before the trial began. He determined that this book, which we left on the site, and the importance of this book is every one of the treaties, conventions, the U.S. Army Field Manual, every bit of documentation legitimatizing our action is in this book by Francis Boyle. Francis is, again, the most renowned international law professor and who has written extensively on these issues. Well, when we got to trial, the judge only said, well, you can put the cover of the book, give the cover of the book only to the jury. The book would not be allowed, even though it was brought by the government as evidence in the case. So they could look at the cover, and it says the criminality of nuclear deterrence. Could the U.S. war on terrorism go nuclear? Well, that didn't make a whole lot of sense, I'm sure, to the folks on the jury. And so we were found guilty of both counts and face 30 years in prison, $500,000 fine, and trumped up charges for cleaning the site and re-establishing the security of the site, which was established immediately. But the second day of the trial, this is almost 7 months later, they decided that the entire wall of fencing had to be replaced so that it's now 180 feet of fence, not 32 feet, that had to be replaced. So actually what they had to do is take down their repairs and put up what they wanted to put up. Well, the man on the witness stand said he never saw the regulation. He didn't know who issued the regulation. He didn't know when the regulation was dated. And he had repaired fences for 12 years and never had to do this. But by doing that, they got the charges up to $3,000 so that we have those charges to pay as retribution, as it were, for our offense. We went back out to the site after we were released. It's the cleanest missile silo site, the whole field of missile silo sites. It has been cleaned so thoroughly of the blood and new fence, and everything is just in perfect order. So they should be happy for us that we have given them the opportunity to update this one missile silo site. But however, they don't express that gratitude. So I guess what I'd like to do is just stop there and answer any questions that you might have. And just thinking that, you know, at this point in history, I think we are the closest that we have ever been to banning war forever. I think we have become so brutal and so barbaric in the way we wage war that the millions in the streets prior to our invasion of Iraq spoke volumes as to where many people living on the planet today are. And I think it's one of our major tasks is to keep that momentum going, to keep that power going for this dynamic point in history. Without that, we will never have economic justice. We will never solve the housing, education, medical needs of the people in this country. So I would urge you to stay with it, to stay in the path, using your energies wherever you feel you need to be. I can't say what you need to do or where you need to be. That has to be your decision. Because we're all in this together. We're all in this big circle. None of us is more important than the other in this activity. And we must all take the personal responsibility to do something. So again, I'll stop there. And any questions that people might have? Yes.
You know, the judge ruling that you couldn't introduce any evidence of international law? You know, it seems to me that it would be illegal. So do you have any, you know, hopes of, you know, appealing this?
The thing is illegal, but it's being upheld by the federal court system. I feel the entire, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive is all one in this country today. And until they separate the powers and we get three sections of government going again, I don't see that there is much chance of the federal court system ruling differently.
But you are appealing it, right?
No, we are not appealing it. Why are we not appealing? Because it is very dangerous to appeal and lose. You establish bad law. The way the law is being exercised right now, if you went on a military reservation anywhere in this country or in any country, if it's a U.S. military reservation, and picked a dandelion, they could charge you with sabotage because you are injuring national defense premises. The charge is injury to national defense premises, national defense materials, national defense utilities. Covers everything. And what we want and what we felt possible in this trial was to find the legality of international law. Our judge listened in the motions hearing to Francis Boyle and also an international law professor from the University of Denver who I believe taught this judge. And they were allowed to testify to him, and they both said from the stand, these women should go free. They should be applauded. They have done nothing wrong. But he would not allow them to testify before the jury.
What about international law?
Well, there's a group of doctors, I believe. Kathy would know this better than I, from Britain, I believe. And they're trying to take the United States to the International Court in Belgium. And we could do it, you know, in some other country. But you do it in your own country, and our own country is the United States. So, and the 10th District, which we would be appealing to, the 10th Circuit, is considered one of the most conservative circuits in the country. And then the only recourse is the Supreme Court of the United States, which picks and chooses what issues they're even going to hear. And definitely, I would not have any confidence that they would deem this case one that they would like to spend time on. Yes. Coverage has been overwhelming. We had a front page story in the Washington Post. We were in the New York Times, the Baltimore Sun, the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle, the LA Times, the Detroit Free Press, the Chicago Tribune. I would say every major newspaper in the country has covered this story. And we are still doing telephone interviews internationally. Religious papers, different story. We have wonderful support from individual bishops. The three of us received a letter from the Master General. This is the head of all Dominicans in the world who is based in Rome. He sent us a letter saying, "Thank you, sisters, in the name of the order, for your powerful preaching." So that's what means a lot to me. And when I'm asked about what support do you receive from the church, we are the church. We are the people of God, no matter what faith we are. We are all the people of God. And from that, we've received overwhelming support. I cannot express in words. I have felt such peace throughout this action and throughout this incarceration that I have never felt in my life. And I know it is because of your support and the support of people all over the world. We have letters in this stack from Brazil, from the West Indies, from Australia, from New Zealand, Nicaragua. It's not just, you know, our friends in Michigan and Washington and Baltimore and Maryland. Yes. ICBMs in Colorado right now have an MX warhead on it. they have been all refurbished. It's a 30-kiloton warhead. And the warheads on the Trident, Glenn would know the kilotonnage on the Trident.
I think it's a 300 kilotons on the MX, and the new Trident
E5
is 475.
Yeah. Biggest message, or the most powerful message, is the personal message of one-to-one, whether it be to your friends at the hotel, whether it be to family members, whether it be to folks that you work with, folks that you walk the streets with. I think there's too large a population struggling for survival, and they don't have time to think about ICBMs in Colorado. They don't have time to think about Tridents at Bangor. But it's up to us to try to make those connections, because they are into survival because of these ICBMs and the Tridents and the military budget that is so outlandish. Over $1 billion a day is being spent on the military. $1 billion a day. We can't even wrap our heads around that. I mean, that's just out of our ability to connect with that. But I think the power is in you speaking to the people that you know. And the people you know appreciate what you are and who you are and what you're saying, and would tend to believe you more than they would tend to believe me. So I think it's important that we spread the word one-on-one. And that, I think, is where the groundswell came for the millions in the streets prior to the attack on Iraq. Yes. Susan Crane stood up immediately and said, "This is a kangaroo court," and was immediately hauled out by the U.S. Marshals. And she was interviewed outside when the jury forewoman was interviewed. I believe that the jury was duped by the prosecutor, myself. And in the jury verdict form, it just gave the title of the statute. It didn't say the section 2 that we were accused of. So if they read the title of the statute, says destruction of national defense materials, national defense premises, or national defense utilities, well, we cut a fence. They're guilty. But the only hope that we had was the charge of sabotage requires specific intent. And this was in one of the jury instructions, but the jury instructions took an hour to read because they were so long and so complicated. But tucked in there, and I think it was number 18, was the specific intent. And it says that you find not only that injury to the national defense was highly foreseeable, but also that the defendants knew that such injury to the national defense was almost certain and nonetheless went ahead. Now, if they had read that, they couldn't in right conscience find us guilty, because the two colonels, in fact, this is the first trial that I was in that the two top commanders testified. We learned a lot about the ICBM system from them on the stand. Both of them testified that the national defense of the United States was not injured or interrupted or interfered with in any way by our action. That missile would have been launched whether we were sitting on the top of that lid or not. Yes. There are two documentaries being worked on. Will come of them is uncertain. You know, documentaries are started several times by folks on very important issues, but you never know where they're going to end up. We have four women from New York that have been following us, and with a microphone in our mouths the 2 weeks that we were in Denver, and they're going to be greeting us again when we arrive back in Denver this coming Friday. They went to Jonah House in Baltimore and spent time there. There's another woman working on a documentary who is local in Colorado. Yes, it is being worked on, but like I say, we want it on the issue, and they want it on us eating a ice cream cone walking down the streets of Georgetown. You know? And so if that's the case, then we say no, totally. If it's not going to be zeroed in on the issue of international law and the illegality of what our government is doing, then we say forget it. Sister, I go back to Denver this Friday. I'm leaving at 11:58 on Alaska. And we will spend that week in Denver, and the sentencing comes on the 25th, a week from Friday. And we will hold a press conference outside the federal building that morning, and we will go silent and mute into the courtroom for sentencing. We want nothing said. You've done your thing. Continue to do it, and we have nothing to say. So that's what will happen on the 25th. But on the 26th, there are massive actions going to take place all over this country, because the judges, the only thing the prosecutor has said honestly, he was quoted in the paper saying that he was giving us or suggesting this sentence to the judge for a deterrence. He's going to deter these women one way or another. And that's why he's going to send us to prison between, my minimum now is 5 years, 10 months. And Carolyn Artis is, 92 months to 115 months is the range. And it's going to deter peacemakers around this country, the prosecutor says. Well, planned for the Saturday, the day after, they're trying to get as many missile silo sites covered in Nebraska, in Wyoming, in Montana, and in Colorado with either a prayerful witness or a risk of arrest. Ground Zero is planning an action at Bangor. People in the Saginaw area are planning an action, whether it be at the federal building or wherever, at a site of a nuclear manufacturer, at a federal building where all these decisions are made. That's the individual group's decision to make. But they are planning this action for Saturday morning, the 26th of July. So that's exciting. We won't be there, but we'll be there in spirit. Well, the only thing allowed are books sent from the publisher, paperbacks only, and they have to be sent from the publisher or from a bookstore directly. You can't send me anything but a letter. Stamps are disallowed. You might have cocaine or whatever on the back of them, and when I lick it, I might get high. So the only thing that I can receive is our letters. Sue Ablau is going to be the one that's going to be updating, and I most likely will not know where I am until sometime in late August or early September. Yes. Did everyone hear that?
No.
There is a tribunal being formed in Japan to bring Bush to trial for war crimes against the Afghan people, and also they have not brought in Iraq in this case.
No.
Just Afghan. And its civic tribunal will be held in Tokyo, the first hearing July 21st. So, yes.
Yeah.
I believe it was a hung jury. Shannon Airport, where the U.S. military goes for refueling. There were two plowshare actions done there. Karen O'Reilly was one, and I can't think of the other names. Kathy? Yep, Mary Kelly. And there was a hung jury. Yes.
I wanted to ask if there were any possibilities, if you're not going to pursue the legal route, for something on the order of people's tribunals or, like the various kinds of activities like that from the independent sector. And I can think of a couple dozen organizations, from the National Security Archive to the Federation of American Scientists, PSR, the Peace Fellowships, and FOR, and so forth, that might be interested in being a part of such a public hearing about a miscarriage of justice on something as important as your action, that might, at the very least, get some media coverage and just help educate people about how terrible this is. Because the reason the judicial system can get away with this, or can allow themselves to sort of mesh with the administrative, you know, the three branches, getting closer, is that there isn't public awareness. And if we can just educate more people about that, it makes it harder for an individual judge to kowtow to some letter that comes from somebody in the administration or the Defense Department.
And we say, go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it. We're hoping that a group of international lawyers will meet with us this coming week.
Or even the Bar Association. I mean, I would think that there would be enough people there that could...
Yeah. Like, we urge and encourage anything, but, you know, we are not able to do anything ourselves. I would just like to close with two little quotes. This one was on the refrigerator of one of our supporters in Colorado Springs, and the quote is, "Just when the caterpillar thought it was the end of the world, it became a butterfly." And the other one is from Joan Chittister, and I believe it applies very much to my life. "Hope sends us dancing around dark corners, trusting in a tomorrow we cannot see." Thank you very much.